alfa.
You are listening to the Toilet of Hell radio show, toiletofhell.com. Toilet of Hell is also on Patreon, patreon.com/toiletofhell. Give us your money. I am Jordan, and with me is Brennicide. Brenno, how's it going?
Jordan, I'm doing fantastic. Particularly better than usual, because, you know, we're kind of working without the boss right now. We're just in the office.
Dad's not home.
I don't know if people shut off the episode when they hear that, but don't, because it's going to be a great one. We're going to have a fantastic fucking episode. Probably the best one we ever did.
I'm morbidly curious as to what people prefer. Like, do they want all three? Do they want you and Joe? Do they want you and me? Like, I want to know, but I don't want to know because I probably wouldn't like the answer in one of those situations. It's like, please don't be mean.
I'm sure I'm the most popular among all of our lady listeners because I'm so hot and cool. But as far as all of the hot, hot, sweaty dudes that listen to us, I don't know if they like me very much. I don't get a lot of feedback, so... I don't know. Let us know in the comments what you hate about us.
Please don't. I can't handle that. All right. Only nice things.
Only nice things. How was your week, Jordan? You get up to anything spectacular?
Not spectacular. I had my like yearly work evaluation, which is always death. Ugh. Like, it doesn't matter how it goes. Like, it went well, but it's just... I hate... Especially now with like having to do it on Zoom... Just to sit there and like recap what you've done for an entire year and things you did well and things that didn't go well and how you're going to improve on it. And just, I couldn't fake it this year. I think I just, I had enough and I couldn't pretend to smile. And it was just like, yep, okay, all right. Not really happy with how things went this year, but there's nothing we could do about it. Yeah, I guess I could do some training on my own. All right, thanks.
Yeah, man, it's like it's never good enough. You're never, ever going to be good enough. You could be the best employee ever. You could be smarter than everybody else, but it's not. It's never good enough, and the reason why is because as a manager who does annual reviews, what you have to do is you got to sit down with your dumb little template and be like, what are three things that you did a good job with? What are four things that you did a bad job with? And so you literally, like, it's part of the task is to hear your fuck-ups and how they were really bad, even if they weren't, and how you got to fix them.
No one likes criticism, but I also don't like hearing praise of any sort because my brain will just go, no, I didn't do that well or could have done it better or... A trained monkey can do this job. I don't know if you know that, but you know, please keep paying me and giving me health insurance.
So I think we're all primed for the shit sandwich, and everybody knows what the shit sandwich is, where as a manager, there's like this little strategy where if you have to criticize an employee, you got to start off with, you know, telling them something good and then give them the criticism. And then on the other end, tell them another thing they did good. And it's called the shit sandwich because you just got a little bit of praise in between some, okay, here we go. Now, what are you really trying to say to me when they come up and they start praising you for something? It's like, just tell me what I fucked up on. Don't fluff me first. This isn't a porn set. I can just take it, you know?
Put it in writing and just tell me what my salary increase is. Don't make me sit here for an hour having to stare at you staring at me while I try to justify my existence.
Well, they have to justify their existence, which is why they fucking bother us. So I don't know. Lay off every manager, every single one of them. You'd be surprised how many millions you'll save for your company. Just take it from me. So we've had kind of a you got kind of a docket of stuff to talk about. You're always so good with the research, and I'm always so poor with the research. So let's go over some things that aren't my fucking desktop binging at me in the middle of an episode.
Well, it's like for the shows, I wake up, I'm showered, I'm shaved, I'm dressed, I have my notes in front of me all collated and color-coded and nice. Like, we can talk about this. And you wake up, your hair is all askew and your mouth tastes like cigarettes. And you're just like, what happened this week?
It's like you're just reciting my life back to me. Every waking fucking moment of it.
Well, how was your week? Your week sounded better than mine.
Did it? Did something good happen?
I mean, you're here. That's an improvement.
I guess that's, yeah, that, I mean, that's the, that's the major change. I don't usually get to do this anymore, but I, yeah, no, I had a pretty decent week. My new job, with everything we're saying, like my new job is actually going very well. I'm making a lot more than I used to for a place that I deal with a lot less bullshit, and everybody's pretty much on task, and everybody's got kind of like a simple set of things that they have to do every day. So I clock in, I do what I gotta do, I clock out, I don't have to fucking worry about it, you know? I don't have that sense of horrible dread every morning when I roll out of bed, which is nice. It's interesting. It's different, you know? But I have a ridiculous commute, man. I got to drive 40 minutes to Hartford every day.
No one wants to drive to Hartford. For any people outside of the Northeast, Hartford has nothing.
Hartford has a lot of, like, potholes. I don't know how to explain Hartford. It's just like a steaming dump, more so than you probably think a place like Detroit or Cincinnati might be. Just it's like one of those capital cities nobody cares about.
Well, it's like Detroit or Cincinnati at least had like golden ages in their past when there were manufacturing hubs and there were lots of factories and people working there, and there was a music scene. And Hartford is like where banks are.
Yeah, let's put it this way: there are no sports teams from Hartford. You know,
like used to be, they all left.
Yeah, right. Like they, I mean, obviously you have like the Hartford Woodchuck Double A Hockey League,
the minor. Hartford Wolfpack are out of there, and you know, there's whatever Single A baseball. They used to have the Hartford Whalers, which were an NHL team. And now they're the Carolina Hurricanes, but like Hartford is like, you can't even say they're skyscrapers. It's like tall metal buildings, but they're all unimpressive. The city is very like old and dirty looking. And there's like one crappy venue there that sometimes metal shows go to instead of going to the Worcester Palladium.
I'm going to say it out loud. There's no Hartford scene. There isn't. There's no Hartford metal. Even if there is, even if you're a guy who's, you know, in a t-shirt with a band somewhere and you're like, hey, I'm the Hartford. No, you're not. Just move. I don't know. It's very
playing New Haven, playing New London.
Right. Right. As far as like the metal scene is concerned, I was listening on my long, long commutes. I get to listen to a lot more music than, I used to. And I've listened to the new Undeath album. It's pretty great. I liked it a lot. My one thing to say is, you know, I'm listening to it and it's like, wow, man, this is a really good song. What's this song called? Oh, the last six songs. Okay. And you know, I guess old school death metal just, I mean, it's like, I'll listen to it. I'll be like, yeah, this is cool. But I don't, you know, it's just some of those things I go back to.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same way. I think partially because I lean more towards melodic death metal. If yes. I'm going towards death metal, I need something to like, I need a hook. I need something to remember. And I think with the death metal revival that's been going on seemingly forever, whether it's Undeath or Tumult or Blood Incantation or any of these other sort of similar bands, is they're very good at what they do. And for some people, like, that's great. That's perfect. I love death metal. And I think what happens to a lot of them is you have the hype before the album, when the album comes out. It'll end up on some people's top 10 albums of the year, but I don't know how much staying power any of these albums have. Like, you can go back to earlier death metal albums and people will still talk with reverence of, you know, a Morbid Angel album. Maybe it's a timing thing. You know, maybe things don't stick around as much anymore because we're all old and, you know, our aging brains don't really stick with this new stuff as much. Or it's just, wait a couple months and you'll get something else that can be just as good and you move on to the next thing. I don't know.
Well, it's definitely what you're saying. But I just think there's just too much competition for our attention these days. Not just musically, but entertainment in general, like the news feed, the internet tabs, it's all noise. It's all insanity. there's YouTube, there's Netflix, there's, I don't know, whatever illegal anime porn streaming site that you guys love so much. It just, it's all there to demand your attention. And sometimes the latest death metal album, especially multiple times in a row, just doesn't make the cut. What I see a lot of bands doing that represents sort of the new way that content is made and curated and released and everything is they release like weekly singles from their upcoming album to a point where you pretty much just get the entire album months before it comes out, save for maybe a couple songs, just from like this constant weekly release wave of lyric videos and maybe just a picture of the album with like this little bouncing wave stream on the bottom to show you, hey, music is playing right now. But it's like that just keeps happening. And I questioned it for a while, but then I watched some YouTuber who kind of explained it to me. Like, they're just trying to do what YouTubers do, which is keep you hooked with constant release of content. And that kind of sucks. I don't think that's the right model. I don't think it's the superior model than just releasing an album. But I don't know. I'm not doing it, so.
Yeah, it's like the shark model. You have to keep moving or else you die, which I think leads to burnout eventually from both you and your audience, just the constant need to make content and to produce and to be seen. Sometimes it's okay to go away. We've talked about that before. We can't miss you if you're constantly here. And I think there's a couple of bands we can think of right now who were just constantly on tour. Was it Blackguard? Oh, was the band that would always show up on tours for like a good 3-year stretch and then just kind of fade away. I don't think that's going to happen exactly with Municipal Waste, for example, but they're touring so much. Like, you're going to get tired. You're going to not want to do it anymore, and you're going to start overlapping and hitting the same places where people be like, well, I could see them tonight, or I could wait 2 months and see them at the same venue with pretty much the same lineup again. So it is that hard balance of trying to figure out what works, especially in modern times, still dealing with pandemic stuff, trying to make a name for yourself, trying to break through just the glut of labels and streaming services and albums that are just constantly being rolled out.
I think we got a great segue from your mention of labels. You guys had brought something to my attention just recently about a major metal publication that is now looking at developing some kind of music label to release bands on, which, I mean, we can say it out loud, is like an extreme conflict of interest if you're just like a journalist publication. But nevertheless, I believe it was Decibel, right? They're looking at becoming a label, or they're already a label with bands. How's that going?
Yeah, Decibel magazine launched Decibel Records, and they're putting out a new live album from the band Dead Guy, who played the Decibel Festival, was it Decibel Metal and Beer Festival, earlier this year, or within the past year. So, I guess people probably just don't care. Music is music, and it's not the first time a website or a publication or some other sort of entertainment entity has created a record label. I think the Sludge Lord puts out albums now too. And another example, WWE had their own record label where they would like play their own music. I think Neurotica was the only band on it, which had the vocalist from Atheist. So,
oh my God.
That's how that worked out. But
well, that was the thing with Metal Sucks too, was one of the guys, I think it was Vince Neilstein, he was the manager for the band Rivers of Nile.
Yeah.
And they were just hyping Rivers of Nile all the time, and, you know, great band, really cool. I have nothing negative to say about the band, but it was just, you know, it's clearly like a conflict of interest where you're gonna give more of a spotlight towards one band than another if you have some sort of stake in the game. And I don't know, man, like, none of us are the Associated Press. It's like not that big of a deal, but I mean, it could be if I want to be an asshole about it.
Yeah. And it's not to say like I am in bands and the bands have been covered on our own website. So don't get me wrong.
How dare you?
Yeah, we have. I mean, I don't think written about my own bands on there. So at least there's something. And, you know, we have other writers too, that they're on labels. They're real bands putting stuff out too. And we've given them coverage as well. I think the bigger difference is that there's going to be some money behind this. And I don't even want to accuse whether Decibel or Sludge or any of these places of any impropriety, but even unintentionally, this stuff can happen where beyond just your coverage of your own bands, it's possible to neg on other bands, even unintentionally, that may be competition, maybe some sort of similar sounding albums coming out at the same time, whatever you want to say. It might not be their intention to cover them less or to maybe be a little bit negative to help your own purposes, but it, like, it can happen by accident. You know, you could say like, oh, well, our album's coming out on Tuesday and so is this other one. I'm going to, you know, we're going to have a bigger blurb or in our magazine instead of these guys.
That's an excellent point. And I think that we're going to see a lot of weird stuff happen with a creative sort of career. Like, if you can even call it a career. I mean, can you be a guy with a day job when you're touring the way Municipal Waste tours? Probably not. That's probably their full-time gig, is doing that band. I don't even think they individually make as much money as someone like you and I, but they probably, you know, keep the lights on somehow. Just, and the way to do that is to constantly do what they're doing, for instance. So in the same vein, I think we're probably gonna see struggling metal publications, metal labels, promoter like firms or whatever, just doing all sorts of weird shit that we hadn't considered or seen before, just to kind of try to keep their heads above water with the price of everything right now, economy being like, I hate to fucking use the word economy like we've been saying for the last 30 years, but it's pretty bad. And especially with fucking gasoline, I don't know how you can tour anyway, given that it's going to be $5 a fucking gallon for most of those touring vans out there. I don't know where the livelihood is in any of it anymore. So whatever people are going to do to make a buck or to give themselves an edge in like a financial sense, I think we're probably going to start seeing it.
If that's the case, then I would say Decibel is in the wrong business to begin with.
We all are.
Print and metal print. And then they're going to make things worse by getting into the music production business of putting on festivals, which we will get to with another story in just a little bit. And then opening a record label. Like, all three of these industries are in varying degrees of dying and being in trouble. Now, there is a quote from Decibel's editor-in-chief, Albert Mudrian, and maybe this mitigates some of our concerns, but he says, "Decibel Records is our latest love letter to the completist, excuse me. I thought it was completionist. I thought that was the word.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like completionist is the word, so
I guess completist is a word. We'll go with it.
Decibel Records, give him the benefit of the doubt.
He is an editor-in-chief.
That explains a lot of the Decibel articles I've read before, but continue.
Burn. Decibel Records is our latest love letter to the completist metal fan, documenting and immortalizing the special live sets from Decibel's live events with equally unique limited releases is just the first step for Decibel Records. We won't reveal our future plans just yet, but readers can expect more exclusive partnerships like this with the artists who have graced our pages and dominated our stages for decades." So you can see the little bit of, you played our festival, we own the music. I'm sure there are agreements with all of this. And it's like, now we're going to put out the album from the show we put out that we covered in our own magazine. So it's not exactly one hand washing the other. It's hands are holding the entire time.
Yeah, this is just two hands on the dick. It's not letting go. I mean, I don't know. I don't feel any better about that at all. It sounds like the kind of fluffy language and to get you focused on the good side of this potentially. I don't like it, man, because it's like, if you got, let's say, I mean, some of these record labels have like 100, 200 bands on them. Some of the bigger ones like Relapse and et cetera. So if Decibel were to grow to that size in terms of a label, and they might, because Decibel has been a big name in the metal community for a while now, why cover anybody else? Why cover artists from Roadrunner Records? Why cover artists from Metal Blade Records, Nuclear Blast? I could go on and on. It's like, it's definitely like, leaves a sour taste in my mouth. I'm not stoked for this whole possibility.
If you're in this situation and you can say, let's just use Undeath for an example.
Okay.
We see that this new album that's on Prosthetic Records is getting a lot of hype, doing well. People seem to like it. Who knows what success is with modern death metal. Let's just say they reach it. They're a well-known name. They're headlining tours, whatever. It would behoove Decibel to write positive reviews of the album now, do interviews, do features, put them on the cover, knowing that they're going to book them for the next Metal and Beer Festival, knowing that you're going to record that album live and you're going to put it out. So it's kind of, you know, it's business-wise, it's a smart thing to do, but I don't know how you feel as a fan if that's any sort of weirdness to you, especially if you're in a band and maybe you're doing okay for yourself. Like, what do I have to do that? And you've been forced out. You're not getting the features, you're not getting the reviews because the people behind this venture are hyping up these bands well in advance because it's going to line their pockets, whether it's for magazine sales, ticket sales, and now album sales.
I don't know. Part of me is like, fuck it, get that bag. But another part of me is, it's Decibel. I don't care if they get a bag. I don't want to be the metal guy anymore. They're just like, oh, making money, that sucks. Fucking corporate shill. I don't want to be that guy. And it's hard not to be that guy because we all have been for so many years. It's very easy to get cynical about this stuff, especially when we've seen so many bands alter themselves in a really shitty way that will bring them more fame and success, but leave the other fans who like them for other reasons totally in the dust. It feels like a betrayal, you know, and it's just one of those things where I want people to be able to be metal musicians for a living. I want metal labels to be metal labels for a living. I want metal publications to be publications for a living. I hate that we are stuck in a creative gig economy where in order to make, I don't know, $100,000, you got to do a billion things for a billion pennies.
Math is hard. Math is hard for everyone. Everyone has a hard time with math.
It's fucking impossible to exist in this climate, especially if you're just starting out. Like, don't bother, man. Just find another hobby. Go dirt biking or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, from a fan's perspective, especially for a band like Dead Guy, who were much beloved among their fans, and it was their first show in like 20 or 30 years, it's a chance to listen to them. Like, I can...
For the next few moments, we decided to replace Jordan with a cool robot as a stand-in. Be sure to share this podcast on social media for a chance to win an exclusive Toilet of Hell effects pedal that will make you sound like this. We promise it's not a metal zone with cool robot written sharpied on a piece of duct tape stuck to the front. Be sure to subscribe to the Patreon for an unfair advantage in this contest that isn't real. I love you. No, I don't.
I can see why you might be excited for that and excited for the band to make a little extra money, and you know, maybe they'll put out more new music because of this. So in a way, that's good. I just, you know, have you ever seen on Twitter or wherever, like, it's one of those web graphs of like Nestle and which companies they own, or like Pepsi?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
It's all like, you see, like, you don't really have a lot of choices when it comes to buying things, and even companies you've never thought of, you're like, oh, I thought this brand was independent and healthy and all this stuff, and it's like, but they're actually owned by Coke. And it's kind of how I feel about situations like this. Like, it's your decision. Like, if you want to get a Coke, go ahead. Like, it's fine. If you want to get the Odwalla juice that sounds healthy but actually has more sugar than a Coke, like, that's fine, go ahead, but at least go in with the knowledge of where all this is coming from and how it works. It's like how we talk about a place like The Orchard or Loudwire, like who really owns them, what are things they are connected in, and why some things are the way they are. Like, why this band that people like is getting the attention it's getting, and why some bands just don't get it. They're not hooked up with the right, whether it's YouTube channel or label or, in this case, maybe a magazine. Maybe that's why they're not getting on the good tours as much, or they're just not getting live releases and things like that. So it's more of just like a, I am giving you this knowledge, do with it what you want.
It's hard to be a metal fan who's so tapped into everything. It's like, I wish I could go back to being the guy with the vest on Facebook, just being like, oh, that sucks. And then that's all I know about metal.
This is for pussies.
You're only a fucking wussy. Why don't you fucking bring your girlfriend? She's just here to look for attention.
It's not my fault she got hit in the pit.
That guy still ends up in my comment section. That guy thinks he's my best friend on Twitter. Like, those are the guys that... I'm not going to say anymore.
You want to so bad.
I got to quit. I got to quit that fucking stupid site. We all do, man. No one likes me anymore. I can tell. I can just tell everyone's tired of me. Feelings mutual, you know, fuck off. Fuck you guys.
Oh, yeah. As Odorous Arungus once said, oh yeah, well, fuck you.
Let's talk about a different metal publication that we all know and love and respect so much because it always has such great opinions about music and just life in general. Metal Hammer, you know, from the co.uk, or Louder Sound, which is a Metal Hammer affiliate. I don't really know the difference between the two. Maybe Louder Sound is more like US based. I don't know. Do we know anything about that?
I'm sure it's one of those situations like Loudwire where they're just owned by someone else who owns something else, and it's just some sort of heartless conglomerate that says, yes, give them the metal and also give these other people hip hop and give these other people country. And then
they put
their arms around all of the coins that we give them and they just pull it in.
So I'm on the Metal Hammer website and I see Louder logo above it, and I click on Louder and it's definitely like a Pitchfork kind of situation. It's very like indie music, but the kind of indie music that you randomly stumble upon in Spotify and has 4 billion streams and you're just like, who the fuck is this? This isn't on the radio. It's not on TV. It's not really anywhere in any circles I've ever been in. How did a billion people listen to this guy with a guitar and a beard who looks sad? I don't know, Jordan. So anyway, Metal Hammer, they put out an article called The Top 10. We love lists, man. We love countdowns, right? The top 10 best new metal singers. The very best ones. And I'm going to go through that list with you and just talk to you about your feelings. I don't think this is in any particular order. It's just all 10 of the best ones.
That's helpful.
Right.
I guess that saves you the trouble of someone going, Amy Lee from Evanescence is number 3. Come on.
Yeah, like I want to fucking, I want it to be in the number because I like the infighting. I like the comment section being mad. It's being like, I can't believe you're saying that so and so is better than so and so. You should be aborted. So let's start off the list. Number one, you got to give it to him. Posthumous, we got Chester Bennington from Linkin Park.
All right, that's fair. All right,
he was a great singer. Yeah. He had some. He definitely had some phases of hair. He had some wild hair back in the day, man.
The bleached little spiky hair.
Yeah, but then there was like the crayon red spiky hair.
And then the shaved head.
And then the shaved head, and I think he just kind of stuck with that.
Yeah, he had his own unique sound for sure. You knew it was a Linkin Park song just by hearing his voice. And we've talked about it before, how the label took him from his other band, which just put out an album, like a posthumous album of like songs they did together with him. I think they're called Gray Daze, and D-A-Z-E. But yeah, he was another one of those situations where the label said, no, get out of this band. You're getting in this band, and we're making $1 billion. And this was a situation where the label was right.
When I was 13 years old, I had gotten Hybrid Theory, and the band photo featured on the album was them all wearing Dickies work shirts buttoned up all the way to the top. And so for probably like 3 or 4 years of my life, at least like most of the rest of middle school and high school, that was like my thing to do, because I was like, that's cool, I'm going to do that.
Yeah,
like
that was
Lincoln Park, and I think that looks cool.
Well, that look, the button up with a grease monkey work shirt, was a heaven for husky guys during that era.
Abso-fucking-lutely, man. It just like hung off you. It was a big square shirt. You could just hide all the roles you were really self-conscious about going through puberty. It's like the man boobs, they just got bigger, and so did my suicidal tendencies. So I just fucking got Dickies work shirts, and I want to thank Lincoln Park for that. So thank you guys. Okay, next on the list is Jonathan Davis from Korn. Huge surprise.
That's fair. Fine.
They say that Jonathan Davis is just the creepiest vocal mastermind. Everything he's ever done is uniquely unique. You'd recognize his voice from the first second. I recently went back on a Korn nostalgia trip, and I'd almost forgotten how much I loved that band in my teenage years. How could you forget? You weren't there. Like, how could you forget kind of liking Korn as a teenager?
You were 23 never... years old. You weren't there, you little bastard.
I will never forget.
I guess we're taking a little bit of liberty when it comes to... These are top 10 singers, they're saying?
Yeah, the vocalists, the front people.
Okay, well, there is a difference between singing and being a vocalist. And, you know. Right.
Yeah. Very unique. Very cool.
Sure. He belongs on the list.
Next is Amy Lee from Evanescence.
Hey, I was right with number three. You were
I know. It's like you had the article in front of you, man. Yeah. Although Killer V, which... Oh, great. Great moniker. Although I don't necessarily consider Evanescence to be a new metal band, neither do I. Get it off the list. Get it off the list. Like, this was a flub. You ejected someone who was more deserving of the spot than Amy Lee. Simply,
what do you consider do you consider them hard rock?
I would consider them. Yeah, I would consider them like kind of in the same exact vein as something like Creed, Puddle of Mud, Nickelback, just like that very rock radio kind of sound.
But their biggest hit was Wake Me Up, which has the guy rapping, which is pretty new metal.
All right, that's fair. But what is it, 12 Stones? They were new metal, right?
Yeah, I mean, they were like pebbles. Christian new metal, Christian hard rock.
I remember they wore like trip pants in their band photos, and I think that was the end of them.
Never go full trip pants.
Never go full trip pants. I can't pronounce this. Sandra Nasik from Guano Apes.
Okay, well, this is again a UK publication, and Guano Apes were a bigger band in the UK and never really broke through here in the United States.
This is the first time my eyes have like rolled across the phrase Guano Apes.
Yeah, not the best name, but it's entirely possible you may have heard this song at some point. The hit was Open Your Eyes.
I'm gonna take 2 minutes, and I'm just going to YouTube Open Your Eyes very fast.
Yeah, go ahead.
Open Your Eyes, Guano Apes. And the cool thing about this is that I stream desktop sound when I make these episodes, so you guys will hear it for the first time with me if you're uncool like me. Guano Apes, Open Your Eyes. Let's see. Let's go. I don't recognize this song at all.
All right.
I just don't. And we, you know, we both had New England mainstream rock radio in our lives.
Well, I grew up in New Jersey, in all fairness.
I guess that's true. Anyway, let's move on. Man, you're never going to guess. Corey Taylor of Slipknot.
Now, do they say Slipknot, or do they include Stone Sour in that?
Just Slipknot.
Interesting.
Just Slipknot. Rob the Ripper, another awesome moniker. Like, I'm Rob, but I'm the Ripper. It's like, okay, can we arrest you for eviscerating women? Like, is that what your edge is, huh? You fucking asshole.
It's Dutch. It's the Ripper is a Dutch name.
My name is Brennaside. I can't fucking talk. Corey Taylor of Slipknot was one of the first vocalists I ever heard who did screaming vocals that are highly pronounced and mid-range. Cool. It makes it easy to understand the lyrics on the first listen without having to read them. Wow. Like, man, you said the quiet part loud there, man. You can't understand death metal vocals? What's wrong with you? I tend to make a conscious effort to enunciate my words when performing screaming vocals because of him. On early Slipknot albums, he also incorporated a frantic style of rapping that sounded uneasy and vulnerable at the same time, which I thought was unique, and you can hear his influence in many bands from today.
See, I think if you fold in Stone Sour, you have a better argument, because, again, this is the singer versus vocalist argument, and in Stone Sour, he did more clean vocals and had a couple of catchy radio rock hits, so I think that's... shores up more of him being higher up on the list than other people.
So this Rob the Ripper guy, he says that he tends to make a conscious effort to enunciate my words when performing scream vocals. So I'm like, oh, okay, he's an artist. So I'm going to go look him up, and I can't find anything on this guy. I found a private Instagram account that he's the singer and bassist for a band called Pavianas, which has 30 followers and one video on Instagram. It's a thrash metal band from Denmark.
Mm.
Okay. Well, at least you got your name in a Louder Sound article. Zach De La Rocha from Rage Against the Machine.
Okay.
Okay. Now, we talked about this before the show. I made a mistake, but I was really excited to see Bones from Stuck Mojo, because I incorrectly assumed that the top 10 best nu metal singers was one of the guys that you guys had that amazing interview with.
No, you're confusing it with their new vocalist, Robbie J. Fonts. And after we did that interview, Bones had actually sent a message to us, like, basically talking shit on this new guy. And we tried to get him on the show too, but I think he's probably not in fighting condition, so to speak.
Yeah, he's not quite as obtainable as the other guy. That's funny, though. I didn't know that. I forgot that he messaged you.
Yeah, well, I guess he still harbors some bad feelings. It's not like it matters, because Stuck Mojo hasn't done anything since that album, because the guitarist Rich Ward is in Fozzy, who actually make money and have at least YouTube hits.
Yeah. Chris Jericho is a name. People know him. And that's the only reason. It's not a good band or anything. It's just, you know, oh, it's Jericho's band.
And another reason for why they do okay is because his theme song in AEW is a Fozzy song, Judas.
Of course it is. Talk about a conflict of interest.
And his finishing move is what the Judas effect. So it's just like, come on.
God.
So I bet he comes out. They're going to put out an album on AEW Records probably soon.
I bet he comes out in, like, I mean, if he's not wearing like a scarf and a leather jacket or something, he should probably come out in like Fozzy shirts that are cut off sleeves and like sweaty, just covered in like oil and water. They just come out oily and wet wrestlers.
Vodka.
Yeah. This is a surprise to nobody, but in the top 10 very best, excellent, great, amazing, astounding, impeccable new metal singers, we have our man Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit.
Come on. Like, I know that's the default. It's like, well, they were popular, put them on the list, but come on.
Limp Bizkit were the most prominent new metal band, and then therefore the worst new metal band. They were the worst. They were, out of all the new metal bands, they are the pinnacle in how cringe and terrible that genre could possibly have been. I mean, a lot of those bands, they did some interesting stuff. It was like, it was a whole new time to be making whatever music you could think of, and labels would actually still sign you for doing that. And I think a lot of nu metal bands hit this really cool stride, but Limp Bizkit is not one of those bands.
No matter how much rehab they're going through now, with people wanting to see them play at whatever, Lollapalooza or Coachella,
it's like guys would listen to it in their pickup truck on the way to their latest date rape, man. Like, fucking Limp Bizkit is terrible.
The worst people.
The worst people liked Limp Bizkit. And I refuse to acknowledge this fucking revisionist history that Limp Bizkit is actually cool, actually. No, it's not. You're a trash person for thinking so. Fuck you. I hate that band. I hate them. They're just objectively terrible. I liked them a lot when I was 13 years old, which is the appropriate mental state to like a band like this. All right, this one I'm much happier to see. Serge Tankian from System of a Down.
Yeah, he deserves to be on it.
Yeah, he was great. Like, I mean, think of a band like System of a Down and then put it up to a band like Limp Bizkit. There's no comparison. Incredibly better music, way better hooks, way better melodies, just way better music, instrumentals, everything. Like, System of a Down was far better.
You have songs about genocide versus I Did It All for the Nookie.
Which is strange because I Did It All for the Nookie is a song about how you got cucked. That's the whole song. The whole song is about how your girlfriend went off and cheated on you and you're a little wussy. That's the whole, there's the lyrics. That's all it is. And then he goes to the chorus where he's like, oh, yeah, you know, for the nookie. It's like, no, man, it actually sounds like you really cared and loved her and she hurt you. So don't make stuff up now. Now that your friends see you all hunched over on the side of the street, you know, feeling like a chump. Oh, I'm going to move on. That's okay. This sucks. I'm sorry. Mike Shinoda from Linkin Park.
That's cheating.
Was his fucking, you didn't have 10 people to fill up. And the most appropriate thing about that is he's the 10th one. He's the one wrapping up the list.
That's a surprise. Like, we joke plenty about Sully Arna, but I could see him being on that list.
Absolutely.
Or I could even see Chad Gray from Mudvayne, at least for the first time, before he completely blew out his voice for the rest of his life. You could see him on that list, too.
Are you happy now? Remember when Mudvayne started to suck? That was hard.
They had their one album, and then that was kind of it.
What was that, LD50?
Yep.
Man, that was. I remember having that album, and it was like there's a baby dick right on the cover.
Right on the cover.
In a way that's not as artful as like the Nirvana baby dick. It's just like a zoom in of a baby dick, and they covered it in molecules. It was just the weirdest album cover. But, man, I don't know. It was, everybody knows about Burt Burt Ding, man. It ripped. That was the hook, you know? That was cool. Not on the list, not at all. But Mike Shinoda's on the list. And maybe this is a hot take, but Mike Shinoda is not what made Linkin Park cool. They could have gotten any middling rapper to do what he did. I'm going to say it. He's not. Life ticks. The clock ticks life away. So unreal. Okay. All right. Well, that's
just
the list.
It's just a poor list ruling to have two people from the same band on it. If this was like top 100, sure, you need to fill out some space. But it's only 10. You couldn't think of one other band.
You couldn't think of 10 new metal bands.
Lejeune from Seven Dust, perfect. Put him on the list.
Yeah, he would have been great. I would have been very happy with that addition. He was a good vocalist too.
Yeah, he could actually sing and added something and made Seven Dust like special and interesting and different.
Oh, okay. I see now. The people they're talking to are in a band called Sick Ends. So that's where Rob the Ripper comes from. He's a guy in this band who's like a new metal revival band. I'm sorry, Sixth Sense. Because and the reason I said Sick Ends is because I'm looking at the caption under the photo of the band and they misspelled it, which just tells you all about metal publication editors like we talked about before. So yeah, Sixth Sense, like Sick Sense.
See, what they should have done is spelled it C-E-N-T-S.
That would have been so cool.
And maybe the S is a dollar sign.
Oh, that would have been so dope. They fucked up by not doing that. You're absolutely right. All right, we got to move on. You guys have heard about Maryland Death Fest, right? It's a festival that's in Maryland. That's all death metal. You had some unfortunate news for me when we last spoke. What's kind of going on with MDF, man?
if you want to go to Maryland Death Fest, you better go this year because there may not be another one. This news came out earlier this month, and I don't know if it got a lot of traction, maybe because it was just thrown up on Facebook or other things are going on. Maybe people are more focused on the ever-changing lineup because, for obvious reasons, some bands are canceling and other bands are getting added to it. But on April 8th, the Maryland Death Fest Facebook page put out a statement, and I'll run through it pretty quickly. While we continue to work diligently on the long-awaited 18th edition of MDF that will finally take place next month, we'd like to share some thoughts with you about the future of MDF. We're sorry to inform you that we will not be organizing any festivals at all in 2023, including Maryland Death Fest. There's a chance that 2022 could be the last edition of MDF, but we're unable to determine that right now one way or another. What we can say now is that we're going on hiatus and we'll decide during this much-needed break if the festival will return in 2024. There are many variables at play that will impact the decision to possibly bring back in 2024, including the state of the world and if we have the ability to put other things in our personal lives on hold to give the event the kind of attention it has always needed and received. When we set out to plan the first edition of MDF 20 years ago, we could have never imagined that we'd still be doing it all of these years later. We have committed so much time and energy to making MDF what it is, never once taking a break. Considering the grassroots nature of the event, it feels like a miracle that we've made it this far. On top of the typical stresses and challenges over the years, these last 2 years in particular have added so many additional elements of surprise and uncertainty that have added to the exhaustion of it all and led us to this decision of going on hiatus. Simply put, our minds and bodies need a break, and we hope that everyone can understand and respect this decision. We understand how much this event means to so many of you and realize that this news can be pretty disappointing, but at the same time, we hope that we've provided you with countless positive memories and a chance to develop new friendships while attending MDF over the years. We appreciate every single person that has ever supported and attended the event, as without you, there's no way we would have made it this far. We're just a couple of guys that got into extreme music 25-plus years ago in middle/high school that wanted to support the music we love, never imagining that MDF would turn into a cultural institution that has seen over 700 bands from nearly 40 countries hit the stage. Based on this news, you should definitely soak in your experience at MDF this year more than you were already planning on. If you were on the fence about going, perhaps now is the time to fall on the side of attending as the future is uncertain. We look forward to finally meeting you all again next month, and we'll be following up soon with more information about this year's event. Ryan and Evan, founders of MDF.
Well, that's too bad. I mean, I've never been. I had no plans on going. I probably won't go this time. But I have seen a lot of people kind of in my mutual set of friends just going and taking pictures together, and then you get that little bit of fear of missing out in your soul where you're like, well, these people are having fun without me. But I mean, man, it's like any other show. It's like any other festival. There's always going to be metal festivals. There's always going to be metal shows. It is what it is, you know. If they don't want to do it anymore, they don't have to.
It's just, it's so hard to do a festival, and every year they come out with their initial lineup, and then inevitably 5 to 10 bands drop off, whether it's visa issues or now that combined with pandemic issues and just logistical stuff. It's multiple stages over multiple days. I think they've moved venues in the past few years, and it's just, it's hard.
It's always a clusterfuck. That's the one thing is, like, we always used to make jokes about, like, the lineups and the changes and stuff and the venue. It's just, like, it is such a clusterfuck to get a festival of this size off the ground, especially when you're working with such small-name talent, you know? Because a lot of these people are like, it's like, hey, we got you booked for Maryland Death Fest. Are you going to be here? My mom won't let me go. You know what I mean? It's like a lot of these bands are just, like, everyday chumps that probably can't get the time off work, because it's just such underground music.
And it's becoming increasingly harder to deal with visas and coming over from other countries. That
definitely, yeah.
And, you know, it's the biggest example of a successful metal festival is Wacken. It sells out every year before lineups are ever announced. And even they have said that they lose money every year on it. So it's kind of like, what do you want more? Do you want to put on the cool festivals, or do you want to go in debt doing that? It's, you know, it's diminishing returns, I think. And there's only so much you can do. If you want to put on the show, you can, but it's getting harder and harder. And if they want to take a break for a year or two and maybe kind of come back in a few years and reassess, see if this is something you want to try again, then I think that's a good idea. You don't want to burn out or go bankrupt over this, because I know they've – didn't they also stretch into Europe putting on festivals as well? I forget exactly where. Was it Netherlands Death Fest was their thing for a while? And I don't know. It's a lot of work for what is essentially 2 to 3 days.
Absolutely. And then it's over. And then you got to spend pretty much the entire year planning and setting up the next one and hyping up the next one. And yeah, I don't know, man. Like we have talked at length about how old we are and how I just don't want to watch more than 3 bands in a fucking row, you know? Like, I just don't. The last thing I want to do is go stand at a show with 1,000 bands for 3 days.
Yeah, my festival days are pretty much well over. I used to go to Ozfest, Warped Tour, Hellfest, yeah. And it's just, it's a lot of standing. It's a lot of killing time also. Because you're going to want to wait for the band you want to see, and sometimes you're even going to miss bands you want to see because they just happen to be playing at the same time you want to see someone else. And the added part of Maryland Death Fest is like some of it's outside, I think, and just hot summer being next to sweaty metalheads in their gross vests. Ugh, no thank you.
And it's a miserable experience, too.
Yeah. People have gone and they have loved it and they've made lifelong friends. And, you know, that's one of the cool things about that sort of stuff. But I'm rapidly aging away from that.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where I look at the lineup every year and go, like, I'd like to see a couple of these bands, but not enough to fly hours away and get an expensive hotel for multiple days and pay for food and drinks and traveling and merch. And it's a real investment. And if that's your one summer thing, I think that's far more doable than trying to extend throughout the summer and maybe even into the fall, just because that's when a lot of tours are happening, because people are off of work. A lot of these bands, they're teachers or they work in academia, so they tour in the summer. So it's kind of like, which works best for you? And
damn, I should have become a teacher. That's a great idea. I think
that's what Bad Religion did for a long time, because I'm blanking on his name. The vocalist was in academia, and he had the summers off. So they would go do that, or vice versa. They would only tour in the winters because I think he worked in like archaeology, and that was the time to do digs on site. So ultimately, it's not good for metal. It's not good for the bands. It's not good for the fans that this is ending. Maybe MDF will come back. Maybe they'll do something smaller. Maybe someone else will fill in the void and there'll be fest somewhere else. Maybe you'll get the old Milwaukee Death Fest coming back. Maybe you'll get New England Metal and Hardcore Fest coming back. Who's to say?
That's okay. That's okay. Because it really was a metal and hardcore fest, and they mixed those bands up, and I don't think the crowd liked each other very much.
At the same time, you got a lot smaller bands playing in front of people, which I always liked about New England Metal and Hardcore Fest.
That's true. And a lot of people actually showed up and watched the smaller bands. Like, usually with a show like that, people just show up for the headliners. If it's like one of those stupid like FET music hall fests they have in fucking Rhode Island over there.
And I think what helped New England Metal Fest is that it was in one place. It was in one venue. So you go upstairs, you go downstairs, you stay inside. You don't have to wander around the campground. You don't have to walk through this bar to get to the outside, to get to the other bar. I think the thing is that a lot of these festivals are kind of getting more corporate based. They're getting some of the When We Were Young festival, and it becomes a destination thing where people with a little bit of money and a little bit of nostalgia can afford to go to it. You could fly out to Las Vegas and spend whatever godly amount of money you want for a ticket and the VIP cabana experience. Whereas Maryland Death Fest, you could hop on a Greyhound bus and go see your favorite European and Asian death metal bands for relatively cheap.
Yeah, man. I mean, it if you put it that way, it sounds like it sounds great. I just feel like festivals are such a 20-something thing. And it's like when I was a 20-something thing and I had 40-something things coming up to me and talking to me about metal, I couldn't wait to get away from those guys. And I can't be that guy. I just can't be the guy. It's like, oh, wow, you know, Cannibal Corpse, sure, nice shirt. Listen, I saw them in 1983. Okay. All right, thank you.
Yeah, age gracefully. Yeah. Stand in the back, nod along to the bands that you like, buy a shirt if you want, and don't bother the young people.
She's in her tank top because she's uncomfortably warm. It's not because she wants your attention. You're fucking gray-bearded and weird and bald.
Back off, Undertaker. Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, we got... Do we got anything else to cover? I got one more story. Do you have any more stories?
You could do one more and then I'll finish up.
Okay, I'll do one more. Cynthia Albritton, is that a name that you're familiar with at all?
Off the top of my head, no.
Right. Most people aren't. If I said Cynthia Plastercaster Albritton, you're probably still not familiar.
If you're into music or if you had VH1 as a child, you probably know the name.
Ah. Yes. Okay. So Cynthia Plastercaster was an artist, and she was her major claim to fame, and the whole thing you're talking about on being VH1 and everything was because what she would do is she was a groupie for major classic rock acts like 70s acts, 60s acts, and she would have all these guys from these bands make a plaster cast of their ding-dongs. Of their wangs. And so she had fucking everybody. She had Jimi Hendrix.
It's like Funko Pops, but for the 70s.
Yeah, she had Wayne Kramer. Jello Biafra from Dead Kennedys. Wow.
Oh, look, that's Jello's thumb.
She also, she did titty casts too. That's cool. She did Yeah Yeah Yeah's Karen O. She's gotten Peach's titties. Stereolab's Letitia Sadier. That's funny, that tits in her name. Sally Timms. Frank Zappa didn't. I feel like Frank Zappa did do a dick. They said Frank Zappa never did a dick for her, but was a very close friend of Albritton. And the two appreciated each other's uncommon approaches to art.
Well, that sounds nice.
Kiss made a song about her called Plastercaster.
Yep.
So she unfortunately passed away, which is the reason I'm bringing her up. April 22nd, she was 74. That's a drag, man.
Well, she lived a good plastercasty life.
Just a very fulfilling life.
She's a... known for her art that will live on for a long time.
We're just going to have to, like, put for the headliner for the show just a picture of all these dicks.
People will click on it.
People will click on it. And I don't want...
I will say, like, it's a shame she never did Odorous with his Cuttlefish of Cthulhu.
That is a shame. That is a true shame. She very well could have. She had all the opportunities in the world, and she missed out. That's too bad. But yeah, that's it. To Cynthia Albritton's family and friends, you know, my heartfelt condolences. Great lady, great art. The dicks are definitely human sized. There's everything is very to scale.
Must have been real cold that day.
Yep.
Who will fill the dick casting void now?
Me.
You're gonna open up a little shop and invite in all the local metalcore bands to come in and stick their dick in the hole.
I'm gonna fucking show up to the next Death Heaven show and I'm gonna be like, come here, Carrie, let's go. I'm gonna give my big Home Depot bucket of fucking gooey plaster.
No, you can keep the Ray-Bans on. It's okay.
You don't have to get hard. It's better that way. I'm just going to leave the silence in.
Just put in some cricket noises.
Don't think I fucking won't. All right. What else you got for us, Jordan?
Speaking of flaccid penises, Tool is now back on the top Billboard chart.
How? Didn't they just put out an album like years ago now?
Because they're working the system and it's all a big scam. We've talked about this before, and Billboard charts and heat seekers and whatever means less than ever. Like, it means nothing. And what Tool has done is, despite Fear Inoculum being released 2 years ago, it's back in the charts for top sales and for, like, top hard rock albums, because they just released a vinyl version, a limited edition, deluxe, 5 LP box set. That's going for close to $200.
5 LP?
Why?
Why?
Because fuck you, you're a Tool fan. That's why.
I'm gonna have to fucking physically change something 10 times to hear it all. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and this was, I think, the same LP they were trying to sell live for, like, $800 until people complained about it, and they knocked it down to $750.
No.
Because I think they signed it, and it was some advanced nonsense. But, yeah, they're gaming the system. It's other bands do this. I think, like, Metallica does this a lot, where they'll put out vinyl and deluxe editions, and they'll sell their album with another album, so it counts as two sales. And they get bumped up to the top of these lists. And Billboard said that they sold 18,500 copies of this release on vinyl. 98% of the album's total sales for the week were on vinyl, which is about 18,000.
I mean, it sounds like a lot. It sounds like a lot. But in terms of Billboard charting, it's really meager numbers.
I mean, nowadays, physical album sales are very small, getting smaller. And we've talked about how there was a hip-hop artist, Boogie in the Hoodie, who made it to the top of the charts with something like 200 album sales.
I love it. I love it, man. It's a great way to get yourself out there if you can just trick a couple thousand people to buy your album. Very hard to do, almost impossible. We've all tried it ourselves as, like, you know, independent musicians, just doing every black magic sort of art form to get someone to pay a dollar for a CD. But yeah, man, it's rough out there. But 18,000, I guess I would have thought it would be more for a band like Tool, but I mean, you got Tool fans, which, even though there's a lot of them, it's still niche, and then you got vinyl record owners, which is even more niche, and then even more niche than that is someone who's willing to pay $200 fucking dollars for a 5 LP fucking deluxe box set.
I am curious if this number, this 18,000, if that's counting each album as a number. Like, this is a 5 LP box set. Is one sale 5 albums out of this 18,000? Because then, if that's the case, it's even less actually sold.
Oh, shit. You know what? I think this weekend is Record Store Day.
Ah.
Now it makes sense. The fucking extravagant stupidity of it all makes sense. And the sales make sense, too. Because these guys are not keeping this box set. Not a fucking one of them. They're all going up on eBay. All 18,000 of them. Fucking Record Store Day, man. Weren't the
that
vinyl
means, that needs to end at this point, right? Like, that's another scam. It's no longer about the record stores.
Didn't, like, all the vinyl plants stop producing like they were supposed to? Like, aren't we in, like, a horrible crisis in terms of vinyl?
There is, but it's bands like Tool get pushed to the front, and Adele, and all your little $20 spin bands that are putting out vinyl, you got to wait an extra 8 to 12 months.
If not years.
If you want that splattered slime green version of the new Thou Mizmor album, you better wait, buddy.
Yeah, you got some time to think about that one. Speaking of time, we're out of it. And I thought we'd have another episode where we don't talk about Tool. And by the way, I feel like you could probably put James Maynard Keenan somewhere on that new metal list. Is that fair? Is that unfair?
I would think it's that's tough. It depends on how you feel about the definitions of new metal. They did start before it became a thing. But like, I don't know if they're
not really grunge, and they're not really metal. They're prog, like I get it, but yeah. I mean, maybe you could put a Perfect Circle in there.
I always feel like they're the same band.
Well, that's what I'm saying is like, that's how you rig the system and get someone who's not the rapper Mike Shinoda on your list.
He's just too good. You just have to have him on here. The list doesn't count if you don't have Mike Shinoda on there.
Things aren't the way they were before. You wouldn't even recognize me anymore. Fuck that list, man. I hate it.
We'll come up with our own list.
We're going to come up with our own list. We're going to come up. Everybody in the comment section, put the actual top 10 new metal singers. All of you. That's your homework for this episode. And on that note, I'm gonna wrap up class. I excuse you. The bell doesn't excuse you, but right now I'm gonna excuse you. I'm gonna let you guys go off. Enjoy your Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, whenever you get to the episode. And hey, man, just keep it as metal as simply possible. And we'll talk to y'all next week.
Bye.
See ya. Yeah. Okay. That's a good show.
Is it the? We'll be right back. You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.